Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the HDFC Standard Life Insurance Company Limited FY18 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Amitabh Chaudhry, MD and CEO of HDFC Life. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us. We'll be discussing briefly our 2018 results over the next few minutes. Our results, including the investor presentation, press release, and regulatory disclosures are already available on the stock exchange and our website. Unless specified, all business numbers quoted by me here are in rupees. I have with me Vibha Padalkar, ED and CFO, Srinivasan Parsarthi, appointed actuary, and Sonali Johri from Investor Relations. The life insurance sector has continued to deliver strong growth across private and public sector players last year. During the year, we also delivered healthy growth across channels and segments. Our total new business premium during the year grew by 32% versus last year to 113 billion. The individual APE growth was 31% and group premium showcased strong growth of 22% for the full year. Our total premium during this period was 236 billion compared to 194 billion, which implies growth of 21%. This reflected 13% growth in our overall renewal premium from 108 to 122 billion. Overall, we had a good quarter and a steady year in all respects. As I mentioned during our December 17 results call, we had expected base effect impact on our new business growth during fourth quarter. The growth in fourth quarter was, as a result, relatively muted versus our 9 month results. During quarter four, our individual AP grew by 11% and group business delivered growth of 23%. This was on the back of a strong growth last year in quarter four. Overall, quarter four contributed 37% of our individual AP and 34% of our group business. Apart from increase in premium collections, as I've stated above, we continued to focus on maintaining balanced product portfolio during the quarter and on a full year basis. As disclosed on slide 5 of our presentation, the proportion of protection business increased from 21% to 26% during the year based on total new business premium. Within individual business, protection premium contributed 5%, 57% was ULIP, 28% was participating, and 9% was non-participating saving business respectively. If you recall, in the first 9 months on a year-to-date basis, our ULIP share was 59%. Now it has come down to 57% because our UL share of our business in the fourth quarter was 54%. We had talked about that as a strategy in the fourth quarter, and we have delivered on that strategy. Obviously, this has an impact on our revenue growth too. The distribution footprint of HDFC Life was further expanded in the latest quarter. By end of the year, we have 149 traditional bank insurance and 22 non-traditional new ecosystem partnerships, giving access to us to our diversified India-wide presence across the income pyramid. Slide 6 of our presentation gives a snapshot of select bank insurance partnerships. As highlighted earlier, expansion and development of the agency workforce has been one of the key strategic focus areas for us. We started on the journey to build an efficient, productive agency platform with an objective to deliver steady growth, higher customer satisfaction, and long-term value creation for the company. We currently have 77,000 mutual agents, which is a net addition of 22,500 agents versus last year. The agency channel delivered healthy growth of 19% based on APE, while maintaining a steady product portfolio and new business margins. The broker and direct channel, including online business, have also been growing at a healthy pace, as reflected in our performance and depicted on slide 6 of our presentation. Overall, the bank insurance channel accounted for 33% of our total new business premium, with a contribution of 7% by agency, 10% by direct, 2% by broker, and 48% by group business. All our distribution channels continue to be independently profitable with steady post overrun new business margins. The new business sum assured increased by 22% to 4.7 trillion from 3.9 trillion last year. This was on back of insuring 33 million lives during the year versus 21 million last year through our group business and robust growth and individual business. Our persistency ratios also continue to move strongly across all cohorts. 13-month overall persistency increased to 87% versus 84% last year. Similar trends for individual persistency have been experienced in line with our underlying assumptions. Our 61st-month persistency has come down a little bit, but please understand and appreciate that the 13-month persistency of that cohort 5 years back or 4 years back was 69%. So it is that 69% 13-month persistency which is playing through 61st-month persistency in this financial year. Innovation across business operations has been a critical element of our of HDFC Life strategy. I briefly talked about our deferred annuity product during the December quarter results call. You may also have read about this unique one-of-its-kind offering in media and other reports. We continue to focus on such product innovation to identify and tap growth potential across niche segments. During the year, we launched 5 new products to ensure need-based selling and cater to diversified customer requirements. We continue on our journey of being a digital insurer with multiple initiatives aimed at transforming customer onboarding experience and improving sales force productivity. We see an opportunity to be disruptive using mobility, data science, and cloud computing platforms. We have modularized insurance product and service offerings in a manner to embed them seamlessly in any of our partner sales journeys. We are making additional investments in the areas of payments, cognitive automation, and hyper-personalization. We have also rolled out the Insta service platform to improve our customer service experience and enable a 360-degree view of a customer. Our next-gen group business platform is in the works to consolidate our technology position in this space also. Today, 99.9% of our individual new business is being initiated through digital platforms. All of the above highlights contributed to a strong financial performance reported by the company for the year. Our EV grew from $125 billion to $152 billion in fiscal 2018. This reflected annualized operating return on EV of 21.5% versus 21.7% for last year. We continue to maintain industry-leading healthy post-overhead new business margins of 23.2% versus 22% for last year. Our OPEX to total premium ratio was at 13.5% versus 12.6% on back of continued investment in business development, technology, and new growth opportunities. Our profit after tax was $11.1 billion for the year, reflecting strong growth of 24% over last year. We generated steady annualized return on equity of 26%. Solvency ratios continue to be strong at 192% despite payment of healthy dividend during the year and post considering the higher growth in new business. Internal accruals from in-force book continues to support our solvency and strong profit delivery. We are amongst the leading fund managers in India with an AUM of $1.1 trillion. This implies an increase of 16% versus 31st March 2017, supported by strong fund flows. The debt equity mix as on March 31st, 2018 is 61:39. I would like to spend a few minutes on the performance of our two wholly owned subsidiaries. HDFC Pension Management Company has now become the largest private-owned pension management company in India. Company has an AUM of $26 billion as on March 31, 2018, delivering a growth of 120% over last year. We have over 2.5 lakh retail customers and highest number of corporate partnerships wherein NPS product has been launched. HDFC International Life and Re Company, based out of UAE, is the second wholly owned subsidiary of HDFC Life. During the year, it collected gross revenue of US$1.9 million, which is 10 times the last year revenue, and continues to identify new growth opportunities in reinsurance segment. During the year, the company also generated a small underwriting profit. The detailed description on all the metrics shared by me is available in our investor presentation. At the end, I would like to thank all of you for your continued support and trust in HDFC Life. We would be happy to take any questions now.
Sure, thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Participants who wish to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Prakash Kapadia from Anived Portfolio Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. Congrats to the team on a good set of numbers.
Thank you.
So two, three questions from my side. You know, what is, you know, driving the ULIP? You obviously had mentioned, you know, in the last quarter, you know, you will be focused, and but ULIP share is still, you know, pretty high, and despite that we've seen VNB margins increase. So if you could give us some sense, is it what 10% gain against equities, and specifically on, you know, the ULIP online pension product, HDFC Click to Retire, we charge 1.35%. So what is the offset by not giving loyalty additions? What is the kind of contribution, you know, this has to ULIP? Can it become meaningful? Some thoughts on that will help.
So let's start with the first question you asked us, which is around ULIP, that we're going to defocus. No, I think what we said was that we'd like to maintain the ULIP share between 50 to 60%. And frankly, if you go back in our history in terms of what the share of each of these products has been, you will find that the ULIP in 2013-14 was 50, it was 62% in 14-15, 56, 53, and 57 now. So we have maintained in that particular zone. Secondly, yes, the ULIP share year-to-date December was 59. We have tried to ensure that we see more sales coming from some of the other products, and as a result, we have been successful in bringing the ULIP share down to 57%. All of us know that the profitability of ULIP products tends to be lower than some of the other products, and if you're able to bring your ULIP share down, obviously it speaks to your profitability. As far as our Click to Series is concerned, and thanks for sharing that you have gone and checked Click to Series. I think it's a well-known, almost a brand name in the insurance industry, our entire set of Click to Series. Click to Retire is one of the pension products we have there. But in my opening remarks, I talked about another product, which is a pension guaranteed plan, which is like a deferred annuity product, which is the only product of its kind in the insurance industry. And we have had decent success with that product. It was launched almost late February. So yes, you know, rather than getting into specifics, let me just state that we drive a balanced business, and because we have a balance across product mix, across channels, the kind of products which you're pushing, the higher share of protection, the kind of cost of acquisition we have allows us to deliver these kind of margins. You would see that our margins have actually gone up in spite of ULIP share going up from, as I stated, 51% last year to 57% this year. So, yes, the balance allows us to achieve that, and 53% last year, 57% this year. And we believe that by ensuring this balance, we can continue to deliver the metrics which you've been delivering and talking about to our investors on an ongoing basis.
And just to add to that, Prakash, Vibha here, if you, as and when you get a chance to go through our segmental, the LODR, to the point that Amitabh mentioned, if you look at segment H, you'll see non-par annuity and some of the other non-par segments compensating, if you like, for the slightly higher UL that you pointed out between quarter 3 and quarter 4.
Okay.
Yeah, it's almost 3x.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, are these products, Amitabh, significant as of now, the entire series, and can they become meaningful in ULIP? So is that a conscious push strategy to improve margins, specifically in ULIP, given the nature, you know, it's lower than the overall company VNB margin?
ULIP margins, I think, is generally speaking lower than overall. I think just the charge extraction is no secret that post-September 2010, it has been very difficult for any company, unless it has very fairly low cost focus on selling unit-linked products. But having said that, it does give us scale, it does give, and we do believe in a balanced product mix. So there is a particular type of customer who still wants to buy UL, and we will sell UL to them. So as long as it's within the overall balance and we are convinced that that customer really wants to buy UL, there is a place in the sun for unit link. But yeah, overall, unit link margins are lesser than company margins. Mathematically, it's not possible otherwise.
And can this, you know, VNB margin trajectory further improve if, you know, ULIP share, say, more or less remain in the band which, you know, you keep on talking about, 50 to 55%, 50 to 60%, depending on the customer demand. So what will drive VNB margins from here on? If you can give us some sense, that'll be helpful.
Very difficult for us to kind of give any future guidance in terms of where these margins are headed. As we have always said, that we are driving 4 or 5 strategies, and if they lead to a situation where we can drive more protection, if we can sell more products which give us higher margin, it will get reflected or will be reflected in the overall margins we declare for the business. You know, I would not like to say anything beyond that. But yes, as a strategy, we have always been on the lookout for pools of profitability, which maybe other players are not focusing on. And we have proved that consistently in the past that we have been able to find those pools of profitability. And over a period of time, the rest of the industry tends to follow us. So let's see if we can execute on that as we move forward.
And lastly, you know, anything on the regulatory, you know, guideline or, you know, on par and non-par or surrender charges, anything from the regulator?
So, as you know, I actually chaired that product committee which came out with some of those recommendations.
You had mentioned, yeah, I do remember.
And so right now, the regulator, I'm sure, is waiting for the chairman to be appointed, and at the right stage, they will review those guidelines and take it forward. So I don't expect anything to happen in a hurry. But as and when some of those regulations or some of those guidelines come through, I think it will position the insurance industry even better than before in front of the customers. And that should, if there is a, let's say, a pressure on costs or margins as a result, I'm sure it will get compensated because you will be able to drive higher growth in the industry overall because the products are just that much more customer friendly than before.
Understood. I'll come back if I have more questions.
Sure.
Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to inform participants that in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to 2 per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from Motilal Oswal Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Congratulations on very strong results.
Hi, Nitin. Thank you.
Hi. So I have a question on persistency. Now that the composition for ULIPs has increased this year, so is it fair to expect that our 61st month persistency will remain relatively lower only? Because this segment has one of the lowest persistency across product segments.
No, Nitin, actually what we are seeing now in persistency is that obviously the protection products tend to have the best persistency followed by ULIP and then, you know, non-par and par. Kind of that's the order we are seeing right now. Obviously, partly driven by, you know, how the maybe markets are behaving. So, you know, if the markets kind of remain where they are, I'm not talking about, you know, continued performance of the market in a particular direction, we do expect that the 61st month persistency for HDFC Life should improve because what we are experiencing in the 13th month should play through in the 61st month. That's point number one. Second, you know, we are working very hard to ensure now, and that we've been doing over the last 3 years, that people who are buying the policy are buying it for the long term. So that is also getting reflected in how our overall persistency numbers are moving. So if people are there for longer term, frankly, the markets or how the markets behave should not impact it to that to such an extent. So that should be the other factor which should hopefully drive persistency numbers to continue to move in a positive direction. And I think if you look at the numbers over the last 3-4 years, the trend has been only up. Yes, the 61st month persistency for us is down because, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, that the 13 month persistency of that cohort was very low, which was 69%. And the 61st month persistency of that cohort is 50.
Right.
Sorry, just to add, we do have a relentless drive on revivals. So even policies that technically look that, you know, that they haven't been collected on the anniversary date and hence not reflected in terms of 25th or 37th month or 61st month, we do try and bring these policies back into the fold. Yes, admittedly, a policy that has been lapsed 5 years or which is a 5-year-old policy that we sold, it's more difficult than a more recent one, but it's still within, you know, on our calling list, and we try and reach out to customers to convince them that they should pay their policies and not lapse them.
Right. So if I take your point that the 13-month persistency for FY13 policies was low, and believing that it has recovered significantly from FY14 onwards, so is it possible that this improvement, as it continues for the following fiscals, can drive a substantial improvement in EV? Because we can have a sudden improvement in persistency at the longer end.
Nitin, so yes, the point is that, I mean, mathematically, if your persistency numbers go across the cohorts, then yes, obviously your EV can go up. If you look at our waterfall on slide number 11, we have said that we have seen a positive persistency variance of, you know, 60 crores, that's the number, for the last financial year. And that's just the behavior of the cohort of policies which is reflecting in the EV. So, you know, that should give you some idea that, yes, today our numbers are better than where our assumptions are, and that is getting reflected in 60 crores of additional EV for us. And let's see how it plays out going forward in the future. But that does give you an idea.
Right, right. Sure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Nitin.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir, and congratulations for the very good set of numbers. My first question is on margin. So can you bifurcate the margin expansion that we have seen in this quarter of 120 basis points for this year in terms of product mix change and assumption change?
So let me first clarify. I mean, we don't give our numbers the way you're asking us to do, but the assumptions change we do once a year, and invariably it is in the fourth quarter of the financial year, which is based on a very detailed analysis of how literally every cohort of policy across every channel, across every tenor is performing on persistency, mortality, surrenders, you know, maintenance expenses, etc., etc. So it's a very detailed analysis which our actuarial department does. What we've always said to our investors is if we see an experience which is worse than what we expected, we immediately take our assumptions down to that level or even lower than that level because we expect further deterioration. If we see an experience which is better than what we expected, we are slightly more careful because we want that experience to flow through for a slightly longer period of time, and we might bump it up a little bit if we believe that, yes, there is enough credible data to support, improving what assumptions we are taking. So the assumption change, yes, as you can see, in the waterfall, the change in operating assumptions has added 160 crores to our EV, and that obviously a change in operating assumptions flows through in our margin also. I will not be able to give you the number. But yes, product mix actually, because the ULIP share is higher, it tends to obviously push down your profitability, but because the protection number is up, it tends to push up your profitability. This also is very clearly dependent on which channels you have seen what kind of product mix going away or towards where you want it to be. So it's a mix of three or four factors, including cost of acquisition. And we are quite satisfied with the kind of numbers which you delivered in the last financial year. And generally, we are seeing positive trends across all the levers which we have to move our margins up.
The reason why I ask this question is because the share of protection has gone up quite heavily from 7.8% to 11.3%. But the margin expansion is 120 basis point. I was expecting it's the share of protection has gone up substantially. The margin could have expanded more. So is there any pressure on any sub-segment in terms of product segment where margins have reduced YOY, or the margins have remained stable on a product basis?
No, so while protection, I mean, as you rightly pointed out, since the protection share has gone up, our margins have gone up. But you also, as I said, our ULIP share has gone up, and you know, from 53 to 57. So that does have a slightly negative impact on our margins. And then, you know, obviously, we are spending more money for the future. You have seen our expense ratio go up a little bit. So kind of that works against our margins a little bit. So the combination is allowing us to deliver this increase in margin.
Secondly, on the can you share the reason for operating assumption? Which assumptions you have changed in this year? Is it mostly persistency or mortality experience? Mortality assumption has also been changed.
Persistency and mortality both.
And
one point to note there is that in spite of that change, you're seeing a positive number in persistency and mortality in the EV for this year. Yes.
Yeah.
So that should again, if you understand what I'm saying, should tell you something.
And then lastly on the agency side, what sort of growth that we are witnessing? Because this year also the share of agency has actually not gone up in our distribution mix.
So if you look at agency channel across the last 5 years, for example, is after a very long time where agency has seen a real growth come through in the overall numbers. So we have grown at, firstly, we have grown at 19% this year. Secondly, please understand, we have worked very hard over the previous 5 years to ensure that agency delivers a certain margin, and we don't want to compromise on that. So we see this agency project as a long-term project. We are going to be very, very deliberate about ensuring that our margins don't get impacted. So yes, we do expect agencies to start growing healthily, but it will be calibrated. Secondly, anyway, growing agency will take time because, you have to start from hiring more salespeople so you can hire the right kind of agents. They will become, productive only over a period of time or as long as they stay with you. So anyway, this agency model takes time to start delivering rapid growth. So first is that after a long period of time, it has started growing. Second is it is delivering same margins as what we have seen in the previous years, which have worked very hard to get to the level where they wanted to be. And third, yes, it's an important area of growth for us, and we expect, based on what results you have seen till now in terms of the rollout which we are doing of our agency life model, we are quite confident that it will play out, hopefully, in line with what we are expecting it to play out.
Sure, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Adarsh Parasampuria from Nomura Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. For the chance, I had a question again, protection business. Last time you all gave the numbers on your, breakup of credit protect, pure protection and health business. If you can give that for the full year FY17 and 18, the absolute numbers, please.
So we have not given the data now, but I can tell you, others, that our credit protect business grew at 63% in comparison to last year. And if you want, we can, have a separate discussion on what exactly you're looking for. But right now, the data which we have kind of given to everyone is 26% on received premium basis and 11% overall protection. I have told you what the credit protect number is, which is a 63% increase over last year.
Just a related question to this, right, that, you're all already leaders in that space. And, I think with this kind of growth, clearly that leadership expands drastically. Any sense that you all can give? I know data on protection is not reported in true sense, but what your share looks like, what the industry size is, how is that growing vis-a-vis your growth? If you can just, qualitatively indicate.
So we believe that on the protection side, as far as the individual protection side is concerned, we are right up there in terms of market leadership, along with maybe one more player. We expect that market to continue to grow, but obviously it is not easy to grow at a very, very rapid pace because, selling a low ATS product, the term product business, the protection business, tends to be a low ATS product, is not the easiest of things to do. As far as credit protection business is concerned, in spite of increased competition and I would say predatory pricing, which we're very clearly seeing in the market, we have delivered very healthy growth in the fourth quarter also and overall for the year. We do expect the growth to slow down next year because, firstly, most of the partners which one could have expected to sign up have been signed up. And while we'll obviously see growth because of the growth in overall loan business, obviously we'll see some growth coming because the value penetration in terms of the number of customers being covered or the value for which they're being covered will also grow. But can we deliver 63%? Well, only time will tell us. But yes, we have a huge market leadership in the credit protect business, which we believe, given where we are and the kind of relations we are and the number of partnerships we have, we will be able to continue to maintain as we move forward. What the size of the market is in both the protection and overall, others, we have tried very hard to find out what the data is very difficult to get because some people declare it, some people don't. So it's just a pure guess estimate at this point in time. But on the group side, we believe wherever it is not given to in-house companies, wherever, the insurance companies are competing with others and it's a, the entity which is signing up for group credit protect is an independent entity, we believe we have a sizable market share.
Yeah. Okay. And the last question on protection is overall, both in terms of pure protection, credit protect, you know, as you said about predatory pricing, say in the last 18 months, right, like to like for you for a similar product, what's been the margin, you know, trajectory? Flattish, 10% lower than where it was?
So, this is Vibha here. In terms of margins, when we're not giving segment-level margins, I think it would suffice to say there are opposing forces on the margin. So, through innovation, technology, through a whole host of things that we have done along with our reinsurers, there is a continuous uptick on the margins. However, with increased competition, there is a race to the bottom if competition would only use a lever of lower the prices. That's not where we want to go, because then it is a race to the bottom. So there are these opposing forces on the margins of protection. But I think I would like to leave it there. Still very profitable, but we need to counter some of the downward forces on repricing with some of the product innovation.
No, ma'am. My only point is that, you know, what I'm trying to understand, completely appreciate your mix has gone up 3-4% in protection. So certainly that aids margin and helps offset. Within protection, you may do more digital, which helps you save cost.
Yeah.
But then there is an opposing force of pricing. So I'm saying, you know, while we not want to give the absolute number, but in terms of direction, is the shift pretty large or still a manageable shift with kind of digital helping
I
to
think
kind
Adarsh,
of?
Adarsh, what Shibha was trying to say is that we are confident that we can manage the opposing forces so that our margins are not impacted negatively.
Perfect. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ravi Naredi from Naredi Investment. Please go ahead. Mr. Ravi Naredi, you may go ahead with the question. Your line is in talk mode.
Hello.
Hi, Ravi.
Sir, how much corrupts of LIC is as on today? Can you tell?
Sorry, did not catch your question. How much of
fund of LIC, AUM of LIC today? Life Insurance Corporation.
Yeah, they are 25 lakh crores as far as I know. 2.5, huh?
Around
28 trillion. 28 trillion is what I saw last week. Yeah, 28 trillion.
22 trillion.
Yes, 28
trillion. So,
28 lakh crores, yeah.
Sir, on these present days, many people are withdrawing their deposits from bank. And do you see it is good business will come to life insurance, or what is the reality?
Well, I mean, we are seeing two trends. One is financialization of savings. And secondly, obviously, as insurance products become more competitive and can give returns which are on a post-tax basis as good or better than deposits and some of the other competing products, it's obvious that the insurance industry will get hopefully, and as a hope, higher share of this savings which are coming to financial products. And yes, it should help the insurance industry in the long run.
Okay. Sir, one more thing. From growth from financial year 11 to 15 were negative. You have given in page number 33. Any reason for growth of minus growth in life insurance?
Sorry, off.
Page 33.
Yeah.
Which area are you referring to? I'm sorry, I'm confused.
Sir, on 33 page, you see, you had given the chart,
yeah.
Private players and growth percentage,
yes.
From 2006 to 2017-18.
Yes.
So in between, you see, from financial year 11 to 14, even 15 also,
there was
minus growth.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, yes, there was minus growth.
Yeah.
Because
so,
the new product regulations came at that time and impacted the industry in a very negative way. And as a result, the private companies had to go and relook at their model completely. They withdrew people from the street. The overall sales numbers came down because they were very heavily ULIP dominated sales, and people could not sell ULIP because they became unprofitable at that point in time, and that's a well-known fact in the industry in terms of what happened in those 3 years.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from SBI Cap Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Referring to slide 10, so expectedly that new business strain has grown a lot because, I mean, of course, the ULIP new business growth. But same time that profit from back book has grown significantly, close to 35-40%. So can you just provide sort of a color that, okay, what sort of a breakup has it got, FY17, FY16, and so on. Related to that, again, in your credit protect business, you also sell some amount of product that is like short tenure, particularly with the MFI loans or the other loans where you have the loan tenure itself is like 6 to 12 months. In that product, typically, you're even in the first year, that will have positive impact. So how much of that positive impact is coming into your new business strain? Thank you.
Okay, so I think we're probably the only ones who give this split, and looks like, you know, there's further split that you're asking for. So that's not something that we are putting out in the public domain, but I can give you qualitatively. If you look at the unwind back in time, FY15, there would have been more of the unit-linked book unwind, whatever was left of that business. But the color of that unwind has steadily been changing over the years, especially in favor of non-par, both protection and savings. And that's what you will see increasingly within the 19.1.
But sort of any year-wise color.
So, like I said, year-wise, FY15, a large chunk of this predominantly would be unit-linked, and very small amounts of protection-related profits. But if you look at FY18, very significant amounts of protection-related profits would be sitting in there.
Okay. Yes. And secondly, on that profit from that duration credit protect product, how much of that is in that sort of a helping your reducing new business expense?
Yeah. So. Credit protect products generally don't have as much strain as unit link products, so they would largely start becoming profitable very quickly. I don't even have to wait. I think you mentioned 3 years or even longer tenure of credit protect, between 3 to 5 years. Don't need to wait for that long, unlike again a unit link product. So and that's not only credit protect but also other protection products. So that's something that one would find unwinding quite quickly. So large chunk of it would be sitting in the 19.1, and all of that, whether it's credit protect, in our minds it's all protection. So whether it's through credit protect as a vehicle or whether it's individual protection, health protection, all of that is bundled into when I mentioned non-par protection.
No, I was talking like your new business strain. Within that, like you sell certain credit protect products that has got the loan itself has a tenure of 6 to 12 months,
yes,
like less than a year. So, of course, in that first year itself, that will be contributing to profit rather than a strain. So I was just asking that, okay, if, I mean, because you are significantly present in that credit protect market, what sort of amount that comfort you are getting in the first year new business strain from those products?
So just to summarize this, so there is no strain or very little strain of credit protect sitting in the 10.6. Large chunk of the strain is unit linked, and we are not giving segment-wise how much is the unwind of the back book.
I know you're after MFI and you're saying how much MFI is on a premium basis. MFI in the overall scheme of things in the credit protect number is not the highest number. It might be in terms of policies, but in terms of premium, it is lower, much lower than 50%. So you can, you know, broadly make your assumptions and move from there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Nischint Chawathe from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Congrats for a great set of numbers. I was looking at slide 21, and this is the channel-wise product mix breakup. If I see here in the direct and broker kind of direct and broker tab, there has been a significant increase in the non-par protection share, which has gone up from like 12 to 16%. So just curious, is this essentially the online protection or anything else in this?
So Rishi, yes, it's both. It is online also, because online has done very well this year for us, and even the direct side has, you know, what we call the direct channel, which includes some of the branch and loyalty kind of customers, there also the share has gone up a little bit.
Second question pertains to the disclosures. This is on the segmental surplus and deficit, and I'm looking at the surplus, which is segment J, that is unit-linked individual life. And, you know, just trying to understand as to how should we read the numbers. There has been, I think, negative numbers for two quarters, and obviously the full year number has also been kind of, you know, fairly low.
Yeah, so Nishin, this is nothing but new business strain. Just given that our, and Amitabh in his opening comments did mention about unit link going up to 57%, and in some of the quarters it has been high. So overall itself, it is a new business strain that is causing this. Hopefully, all things being equal in terms of persistency, etc., it should unwind into NBM.
Okay, those were my questions. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you, Nishin.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vinod Rajamani from HSBC.
Hello, thanks for taking my question. You've not provided the walkthrough for the free surplus. Would you be providing that separately or?
So Vinod, that is only required in APS 10, and we did that as a one-off exercise at the time of listing. So not planning right now.
Okay.
Thank you. Shall we move to the next question? The next question is from the line of Harshit Toshniwal from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, congratulations for good set of numbers. A couple of questions. So when I look at the sensitivity to embedded value, so for 100 basis points increase in reference rates, the EV gets impacted by 1.8% as per the presentation. Can you just give the breakup that how the net worth and the value in force is going to be impacted by a 100 basis point increase in reference rates? Even a broad sense will be helpful.
Srini here. See, the embedded value, like you said, is made of different networks. But more importantly, the composition in terms of the products that are contributing to the embedded value that drives the sensitivity numbers. Since in the back book we have the UL share much higher than the new business share, any increase in the interest rates, say in 100 basis points, would reduce the EV, and like you see in the new business side, the sensitivity, it is the other direction, because the proportion of the UL business in our new business is much lower than the back book. So therefore you'll have differential movements, but in terms of the net worth is broadly made of debt securities. So therefore, the impact will be slightly more, I would say, on the net worth compared to this. Because in the risk, when the interest rates go up, the fund values on the fund value of the UL book reduces, and that has got a second order impact on the future FMCs that you learn on the UL business. So I think higher discount rate, the contribution from this will be much lower than from the net worth.
Okay, so basically going forward, the impact of an increasing interest rate will be positive on VIF as we move forward.
So VIF will be lower because, when there is 100 basis points increase in the interest rate, the fund value backing the UL book will go down. And therefore, you will have that's why you see the EV going down in the sensitivity table.
But when our protection component is increasing much faster than ULIP, then going forward, shouldn't that compensate for that fall?
Yeah, over a period of time, yes. But we are talking about the EV today. So okay. That's why I said in the VNB, it's a different direction to EV. So
okay.
In new business, the composition of the UL is much lower than the back book. Therefore, you have different direction movements. But yes, you are right. Over a period of time, the trend might change depending on the composition of the book in the future.
Okay. And another question. So this one is on the agency channel. So when I look at your, about the granular data on the agency business, so the number of policies one agent of HDFC Life writes is one of the highest in the industry, but the ticket size is amongst the lowest in the industry for an individual agent. So based on the IRDA disclosures, so the business which one of the HDFC Life agent does is mainly ULIP or participating as disclosed in the PPT. Then why is our ticket size so low compared to other peers?
See, our agents also sell a significant proportion of protection business, and which usually much more size than UL and other savings products.
See, I can't take that for you. You're absolutely right that our ATS is lower than where we want it to be. One of the reasons why we are investing in so-called agency in a very, very big way is to move our ATS and move our productivity to a different level over a period of time. But I also, as I said, we have worked very hard to make a model which is, I think, perhaps one of the more profitable models in the industry as we stand today. So yes, in that profitable model, ATS is lower than where we want to be, productivity is lower than we want to be, but the margin is better than almost everyone, at least I'm aware of, in the agency model. So yes, we agree that if you really want to grow this channel, you have to improve your productivity. You have to improve your, and one of the ways to improve productivity is increase your ATS also. But at the same time, we want to be very cognizant of the fact that we don't want to lose this journey which we've been on as far as margin is concerned. So we'll work our way gradually through this and ensure that we reach the kind of right mix over a period of time and not suffer as we go through that journey. So your point is well taken.
Okay. And so just one last data point question. So amongst the 70% banca mix which is there, how much would be HDFC Bank, if you can quantify that?
It's a significant part. Not giving out distributor-wise numbers, but it continues to be a significant part if you look at it as a percentage of this individual business. But if you look at it overall, along with group, it does go down quite significantly to 38% of the total business.
To 38% of the total business.
Yeah, this is all HDFC group entity, not just the bank. So these are all promoter group entities.
Okay, so, okay, ma'am. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Sara from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats for a good set of numbers. Sir, I have a few questions. So first on your reinsurance policies. So what percentage of your pure protection would you be reinsuring, and what would be the terms in the way that whether in terms of commission rates that you cede out? So is it a positive in terms of, does reinsurance lead to positive margin accretion as such? And what part of your protection business would you be reinsuring?
On the reinsurance, we do reinsure a substantial portion of our individual protection business, whereas on the group protection, we retain most of it.
Okay, and in terms of margins, how would that work out? So is it like mostly done on proportional basis with the reinsurer, or are there other final?
It's a surplus transfer, so everything excess of loss over a certain retention limit. So it's not a proportional. Proportional thing is not allowed in India.
Sure. And so one thing you said is substantial portion. Would it be possible to quantify the number? Means what proportion of your individual term you would be reinsuring?
Every single policy is reinsured.
So that is the obligatory part, right? The 5%. But do you do above the that as well?
There's no obligatory part at all in life insurance.
Okay. And one thing on your policyholder's account, so there is a sharp decline in the change in actuarial liability. So some thoughts on that, why it has come down this quarter, and
So one of the big ticket reasons is market movements and the change in actuarial liability, especially when you look at the unit linked segment, it just mirrors at about 3,500 crores. You'll find a mirror in terms if you look at the income side of unrealized loss because of market movements. That is the single biggest reason for the change in actuarial liabilities.
Okay. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manish Oswal from Nirmal Bang. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. My question on
Mr. Oswal, we can barely hear you. If you could speak a little louder, maybe use the
handset. Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. My question on the persistency ratio on the 61st bucket. So compared to last year, this year the ratio has declined. So could you throw some light on the reason for the same? And second is, what is our strategy on the M&A in the industry? Are we looking inorganic opportunity to expand the business?
So on the persistency, you are referring to our 61st month persistency. Because the original persistency, the 13-month persistency, was only 69%, due to various reasons, there were a lot of product changes, the product architecture itself. It's difficult to correct it at this point in time, although we do reach out to customers to the extent that we can and to the extent that we do have their contact numbers to try and revise the policy, but it is fairly difficult. So to some extent, this we would have to continue and live with this problem on that particular cohort that is currently in the 61st month. But you will see that the 13-month persistency since then, and this is there on the slide that you mentioned, slide 22, we have been working, a lot of things that we have done and got it up. But on that particular cohort, it will continue to lag. On the M&A, I'll just...
As far as M&A is concerned, we have been quite vocal in the past that our promoters are very supportive of the right kind of M&A. If the right kind of deal comes along at the right price, which is going to be accretive to us, we'll be very happy to look at it. We do believe that in the industry, there are quite a few players, and some of them at some stage will get sold. So as and when the right opportunity comes along and we are able to reach a conclusion on any deal, we'll obviously share with the markets and you at that point in time. But yes, our strategy would remain to look at M&A candidates as and when they might become available.
So when you look at the M&A candidate, the consideration of key consideration for before the management, what are they? Those are...
So obviously one is the valuation, second, but most important thing is what are we going to get for what we're going to pay for. So either they have a niche channel, a certain niche product which we can't replicate, or they have certain relationships which will continue for a long period of time, and so we can benefit from those, you know, corporate agency or bank assurance or some of the relationships they might have. So we will obviously look at those facts, and based on that, if they make sense to us, then obviously we look at the valuation and whether the valuation is sensible or not. And obviously, end of the day, the partners or the relationships which exist or the channels which exist should be willing to work with us also as we move forward. So all these factors will be looked at before we can consume it, I mean, of any kind.
Sure, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Neeraj Toshniwal from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Hello. Congrats on a good set of numbers. I just wanted to know on the attachment rates, where are we with the partnership we have done till Q3, I mean our third quarter, and what has been the rate in the fourth quarter and with the new partnership?
So, well, we don't talk about the attachment rates. We're talking about the credit protect category, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So we don't talk about attachment rates, but let me just say that there is still a decent amount of value penetration which is possible both in terms of the attachments and the amount of coverage which we provide. We do obviously monitor that across every relationship, but we don't provide overall what the attachment rates are and you know what the value attachments are and stuff like that. We don't provide that data.
Yeah, but some color on, how it's shaping, because it would be helpful for, taking some view on your future.
I said there are two levers for us to grow, three levers actually. One is we keep adding new relationships. Now, from that perspective, I think most of the relationships which could be added are pretty much been spoken for. Second is the overall growth in the loan assets of each of these companies or each of these partnerships we work with. And third is the value penetration equation, where you can increase the attachment rate and also increase the value for which the policies are getting attached. We believe that both on the number two and number three, there is a decent growth of positive, which is level going forward in the future.
Okay. And in terms of, I think that data also is not provided, but for industry, cross-sell and upsell data, but some color on how it's shaping up for you and any plans, because direct sales has been increasing. So just wanted to know on something more on that.
So if you look at slide 7, you'll see the bottom right-hand graph that does show the cross-sell opportunities that we have seen in FY18. The 6.2% that you see, it has gone up from the 5.5% in FY17. So our ability to harness with the help of analytics in a very sensible manner and based on the needs of the customer, for us to continue having a connect with the customer long after, say, a credit protect cover is over or some other product is has done its course. But we will do it at the back of using analytics. So
okay.
It's just the beginning, as you can see. So just 4 years ago, we were sub 2%, and that has gone up 3 times.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to inform participants that in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to one per participant. The next question is from the line of Rahul Marathe from Akash Ganga Investments. Please go ahead.
Hello. Congratulations on good set of numbers. So I was looking at this gross premium. A single premium has grown by 30% year-on-year. So isn't a single premium kind of lumpy business, and is this kind of growth rate being expected carried forward, going forward?
So the single premium consists of... it's part of our strategy. A large part of the single premium is Credit Protect. We've been, several people who've asked us questions on Credit Protect. So there is a large element of that. The numbers are there in the presentation. Another one is on our non-par single premium, which is the annuities and largely the annuities business. So that also is something that you hopefully have seen our advertising on that, on the products that we've launched, on deferred annuity and also our immediate annuity. So that's also sitting in there. Of course, there is also the traditional group funds business. So these are the three big ticket buckets of single premium. But to answer your question, yes, with single premium, it is a, we do get onto the relentless treadmill of replacing that year on year, but we believe that this is just not even the beginning. I can't even say tip of the iceberg. We're even before that, because a product like that just did not exist in India. So we are not anxious about the fact that there is a lot of single premium.
Okay. And one more data point question. What would be our penetration for the banker channel?
We're not really giving information on any one particular channel, but I think it suffice to say that there is just in the bank of growth of the banks, and that's something that I'm sure you'll be tracking. Just for us to match that growth would mean that there is enough opportunity for us to grow on the bank on the back of the growth led by the banks. And over and above that, if we were to wrap around it with new products, new technology, say with the case of some of the banks like HDFC Bank or an RBL or Saraswat, whatever it is that they are running in terms of initiative, if we are able to match step for step, we should be able to drive the kind of growth that that is there in our strategy and our business plan.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
The next question is from the line of Shripad Aoke from Smart Investor. Please go ahead.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Could you please help us to understand this income from investment in fourth quarter, which is negative 9.4 billion?
Yeah. So this is nothing but the movement, market movement, just given that this is a derivation of where the equity markets have been, and if specifically in quarter four, the versus the comparable period of the previous quarter and the earlier year as well, its equity markets have not done as well. So to give you a sense, BSE 100 increased by 10.6% versus the previous year increase of 21.1%. So that is reflecting in the mark-to-market movement.
Okay.
There would be a mirror amount that you would see in actual valuation reserve.
Okay.
So it would be largely P&L neutral on the unit linked segment.
And just next question is like, you know, since the share of the protection product has gone up and continuously since FY 2015 from 12% to 26%. So can we expect around 30-35% share in next 2 years in the protection product?
See, it's difficult to put out a number, but I think suffice to say that when we compare India versus China, and given that their per capita GDP is 4x, and given that they, you know, they, I think it is definitely a given that at some inflection point, India will take off as protection products changing from being a push product, which largely it is today, to a pull product. And that still hasn't happened. And when that happens, I think hopefully we would be well poised, both in terms of what we sell in protection as well as how we sell. So that combination is pretty potent. And we should be able to ride any uptick in that India Inc. would see on protection becoming a pull product.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the last question. On behalf of HDFC Standard Life Insurance Company Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.
Thank you.